The Guardian.
Welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Lots of fun at Anfield. Strong-willed linesman, Wanyama's pile driver, Salah's genius, unofficial VAR, and nerves of steel from Harry Kane. Elsewhere, Everton look hungover or still drunk at Arsenal. Manchester United, the only side in the Premier League not to concede a goal. And Burnley hold the champions Manchester City. In Europe, Sid's up a mountain. Archie will round up Germany, plus your questions feedback corner. And that's Guardian Football Weekly. We have a panel. He knows everything about football. It's the Racing Post's Mark Langdon. Hello.
Hi, Max. You okay?
I'm really good. I like the fact that you've raided Claude Puel's wardrobe
For the gilet.
For the puffer gilet. I thought Claude was the only one who owned one. And your notes are on, how big is that piece of paper? I mean, is that A6?
Yeah, it fits in the pocket easier than the A3. So
that's good.
Reporter's notepad.
Funny, knowledgeable, and a worryingly good stand-in host of the pod. It's Ellis James.
Oh, be quiet, Max.
Ewan says, what are the chances of Ellis staging a coup halfway through?
Well, very, very low. I mean, it's there, but it's very low.
Yeah,
it's good to see you, though. I haven't seen you since we did the live show before Christmas.
Mm.
And it was, can I just say, an absolute pleasure to be in a room with 600 people who live their lives via the doctrines of Glendenning. Live their lives via all of Barry's core principles. And he's so humble, I hadn't realised the effect he has on people. The hour-long signing at the end, that was great. People just wanting to meet you. Healing the sick, I thought, to be honest, that was a bit much. Made a few promises that you couldn't keep.
Get your tattoos of Barry here.
Extraordinary.
Yeah. Some people took him up on that offer.
It's like being on stage with Madonna.
Including that sort of plastic 80s breast
conical breasts.
How are you, Baz?
Slightly embarrassed, no.
Oh, that's okay.
Let's put that homage.
No, but you're so humble about it. It's just knowing that everyone in there sees you as some sort of papal figure. It was great.
But I'm just reassuring for you, Ellis, because that's how you view Barry.
Oh, absolutely.
It must be nice,
yeah.
Nice for you to know that you're not alone.
Though I'm not the only one. Hmm. Yeah, yeah. Although, when you're a fan of something, you want to be the biggest fan. And I couldn't compete with some of those people in the front row. The people who, the long-term queuers.
There's a fine line between fandom and insanity, Ellis.
Yeah. And I think I tread that quite carefully.
Should we start at Anfield then? Liverpool 2, Tottenham Hotspur 2. So many talking points that we'll definitely talk for too long about this game, and producer Jonathan will get very angry with me.
And we still miss something.
Absolutely, we won't have any time to do any other games. I'd like to start with the composure and the nerves of Harry Kane. About an hour after he scored that penalty, I was still nervous for him.
Yeah.
Because you sort of think, if you miss two penalties at Anfield in the last 5 minutes of a football match, that's a real impact on your, not just career.
Marriage.
Your marriage, your life.
Yeah.
And a sign of why elite sportsmen are elite sportsmen and the rest of us are sort of riddled with self-doubt. Does anyone agree with that?
Yeah. He is such a special footballer because he didn't. I thought he looked slightly nervous, but I was wondering if he was going to drive it down the middle like he did the first time as a double bluff. But no, he went straight for the corner, and that is what sets him apart. I think he's a wonderful footballer.
Pochettino said afterwards he's got big, big balls, and it kind of felt like the right appropriate praise, really, because that was all about his balls, really, wasn't it, in such a difficult situation, because I didn't fancy him to score. Having missed the first one, I thought he was going to miss the second one as well.
It's balls crossed with sports science. It's old football and new football.
Actually, balls is used quite a lot in footballing parlance, isn't it?
Yeah, you think that sports psychology would have got rid of words like balls.
Well, after the rugby on Saturday, when Johnny Sexton beat the French with that ridiculous drop goal last kick of the game, there was a meme going around of him with a giant gonad pushing it in a wheelbarrow in front of him. There was a lot of it on show, and, you know, Harry Kane, what he did was similar, but let's not forget that he did miss the first one, and that possibly was down to his nerve deserting him because he was hung up on getting that 100th Premier League goal, which is a kind of meaningless record. It's an impressive record, and he's an impressive player, but it was brave of him to step up and take the second.
Okay, but it would have posed far more questions had he said, "I can't do it. I can't." Had he given the ball to someone else and said, Christian Eriksen said, "Please, I've lost my bottle in a really big game. I think this one's being televised, actually. This is going to come back to haunt me."
So maybe he didn't want to take it at all, but he just had to.
All those people are looking at me and they really don't want me to score.
They haven't got my best interests at heart.
On whether they were penalties, let's start with that second one that he scored. Jürgen Klopp said there were some real challenges in the first half, lots of moments when it could have been a free kick, but the ref said, today that's the game, that's allowed. Then the softest touch in the whole game decides the game. It's not a penalty, it is a situation. I would argue with Jürgen Klopp that Virgil van Dijk kicked Eric Lamella in the leg, and it is a penalty.
I would agree. And I've seen Graham Pohl and Dermot Gallagher, former referees and rent quotes, say both penalty decisions were correct. It's
Mark Clattenburg says that the first one shouldn't have been given because it was offside. And he's the first person I've seen, other than the pundits on American telly, because a friend of mine lives in America, and he was saying that the American pundits didn't think it should have been given, but on Sky it was fairly unanimous that it should have been.
So the second one we think is a penalty. The first one... Firstly, is it a dive by Harry Kane?
I think there's contact, isn't there? I thought there was contact. But
Lars would be very angry with you for just saying that's not enough.
Well, he did that thing that Dele Alli had done a few minutes before, where Dele Alli, because he could feel players behind him, thought, I'm just going to fall, because if they clip me, this will get given. And then no one clipped him. He fell and it looked absolutely vile. And yet Kane, it was a minimum contact, but because it was contact, that allows him to fall over. Morally, they've done the same thing. It's just that Dele Alli gets crucified for it, and Harry Kane, that's good gamesmanship.
If Salah goes round Lloris in the same manner and then falls over, Jürgen Klopp would be demanding a penalty, as would all of the Liverpool fans that were at Anfield saying it wasn't a penalty. I tend to think it wasn't.
Are you suggesting those Liverpool fans are in some way biased?
Just slightly. Maybe, Barry, just a bit.
Hey, wait, no one knows the game like Liverpool fans.
If you want to go down this path, you're very welcome.
It's a Jonathan Pearce always says, isn't it? Of course, they've got a fine understanding of football here at Anfield.
It doesn't matter. That is my least favourite. It doesn't matter which set of fans. We said it at the live show, didn't we? You know, the Shrewsbury fans, very intelligent crowd. Yeah. You're like, have you ever been to a football match? Some of them are, and some of them aren't.
Yeah.
It's like the world. Sorry, Mark,
I wish it wasn't I wish those situations weren't penalties, because I think strikers do take the easy option now, and that they just know that the referee will give a penalty almost 100% of the time now when they go round and kind of fall over them. It just feels like it is a penalty because virtually all of them are given now.
There was the moment, because we're talking about whether it was offside or not. Now, for me, Lovren touches the ball, right? But Lovren arguably would have tried something different if Harry Kane wasn't behind him. So Harry Kane is interfering with play. I can't see why the linesman and the ref are saying, well, if Lovren's touched it, he's not offside. But if Lovren hasn't touched it, he is offside. Surely he's offside.
Well, I thought he was offside until you made that point and have changed my mind. And I now think that you are right, which is something I don't say very often.
Especially in front of Ellis.
Well, this is what Mark Clattenburg said. The question is whether Dejan Lovren deliberately played the ball and has Kane, by being in an offside position, impacted Lovren. The issue is not whether it touched the defender, but whether he played it deliberately. You can make an argument that Lovren would not have made this type of attempt for the ball if Kane was not close to him, and therefore the impact of his presence plays a part in the decision-making of the referee.
How is an official meant to judge all of that during a game? I mean, it's almost impossible, isn't it?
I think the laws of the game... It was a penalty, but as Jermaine Gina said on Match of the Day, it feels offside. Doesn't it? It feels like it's offside.
But you're right, Mark. How can a referee... It's as if a referee could possibly go over to his assistant referee and then they could ask someone else if they'd seen anything on the television, which... seemed to happen. There was audio, I think, of them talking to Martin Atkinson, going, Martin, did you see anything on the TV? And then Jeff Shreves has sent a tweet saying, for those claiming he did, I can categorically state fourth official Martin Atkinson did not look at our monitor.
He was watching The Handmaid's Tale on his iPad.
My favourite bit of that was Jonathan Moss saying, I don't know if Lovren touched it. I'm giving a penalty anyway.
Sod it. Have one. Very strange. It was just that moment was strange. It was a bit like it was unofficial VAR, much like Zidane and Materazzi, where we all know, we all think we know, that someone looked because the ref didn't see that headbutt, but he was still sent off.
What, in the 2006 World Cup final?
Yeah, don't you think?
I didn't know that was unofficial VAR.
Well,
that's new to me, but still great.
I think, I mean, I don't know for sure. I wasn't there, but I really feel that Zidane got sent off.
I think there was unofficial VAR. Mm. I don't think there's any doubt.
There was strong suggestion that it came from the official, the fourth official, and how he saw that, whether that was via TV or not, I don't know.
Whoever was doing Jeff Shreve's job in the 2006 World Cup was not covering the screen from the fourth official. The goals were good, weren't they? Mo Salah, Doc Chicken asks, how good is Mo Salah, Mark?
Well, he's a lot better than Jose Mourinho thought when he sold him at Chelsea. He's impressed me so much with his finishing this season, because at Roma I thought he got into great positions and often supplied Dzeko with a lot of goals last season. But in one-on-one situations, he quite often fluffed his lines, and actually when he had time to think about it, it was when he didn't finish so well. And yet I think we've seen a change in that this season, and perhaps that first goal at Anfield yesterday was a good sign of that, when he, you know, those were the opportunities, even though it looked simple, those were the ones that actually, you know, he has struggled with previously, and there was a calmness to him. But the second one was just sensational.
He's one of those players you expect him to score. You know, Benteke is through on goal, I expect him to not score. Mo Salah, I expect to score. I expect Harry Kane to score, and I'm surprised if they don't. There aren't a huge number of strikers you can say that about. But I'm still mystified as to how he got the ball over Hugo Lloris for the second one. I've watched it so many times, and I just don't understand where he found the room and the space to get that little dink in, and how Lloris wasn't able to block it. And I don't... Lloris should probably have stayed on his feet, but...
If he stays on his feet, then Salah can just side foot it past.
Yeah, well, look, I'm far from a goalkeeping expert, but I just don't know how he got the ball over Lloris for that. I'd imagine Lloris can't believe he did it either.
I far preferred his goal to Wanyama's goal, actually.
Oh, I disagree.
No, because obviously, what a strike. But I see so many players attempting that, and then it goes into row queue, that when it actually does happen, it leaves me feeling numb, Max. and I've seen bad players at Tuesday football scoring goals, speculative shots that have gone in, whereas I've never seen a bad player score a goal like Mo Salah's.
Oh, technically Salah's goal is
extraordinary.
Yeah. Technically Salah's goal is much better, but I believe my favourite kind of goal is someone just hitting it as hard as they possibly can.
No, dribbling. It has to be about dribbling. Kinky and cladsy. That's what I'm looking for, rather than someone just putting their laces.
Tony Yeboah. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. But with Mo Salah, every time I watch Liverpool, he does something that takes my breath away. And he's still occasionally wasteful. Like, he's not as lethal as I don't know, Robbie Fowler, but he does something in every game that just makes me think, this guy is on a different planet. If Kevin De Bruyne was having such an amazing season, people would be writing books about him.
Davinson Sanchez, is he good at football? Because he got a lot of praise at the start of the season. I went to the Europa League final and when he played for Ajax, and I thought, Manny just sort of let him have the ball, and that was when they were at their best. And Liverpool actually seemed, their form of attack seemed to be, let Davinson Sanchez have it and he'll give it to us in a very good position for us, if Lloris hasn't given it to us already from the goal kick.
I thought he was a lot better when they played the back three. When Toby Alderweireld's there, he looks a lot calmer. I think it's easier for him when you've got somebody so good, and you know, with Vertonghen as well, he's better suited, I think, at the moment to the back three. And I was surprised he lasted as long as he did. Actually, I thought he could have got hooked before that. It was probably only Dyer's lack of pace that was concerning Pochettino. And then when Mane went off, I mean, they kind of worried less about the speed of the Liverpool attack.
And was that what? Spurs are trying this short goal kick and it's not working. And it just wasn't working for the whole first half. Why were they persevering? I was just watching that going, just knock it long.
Well, that's what Liverpool were doing, wasn't it? And they were causing the Spurs defence all sorts of problems. Just going back to Sanchez, I thought if you were going, you know, it was a wonderful game. Nearly everyone contributed, but Eric Dyer was the standout poor performer, in my opinion. You know, and not just because of that wonderful defence splitting pass which let in Salah for the first goal after 3 minutes, and you know, immediately putting his team on the back foot. But I stand corrected on that one.
Liverpool unsettle virtually anybody that plays in that position, don't they? In front of the defence, Firmino is usually like the first line of that press, and I think a lot of players have found it difficult. You know, they just get so panicked by whoever,
especially in the first half of the
hour. Yeah, exactly.
But it was two good teams who are nowhere near winning the title because there's mistakes in both of those sides, and it was one of those. I loved it. I watched it yesterday, but it was a very, very silly game. And those are the games that ex-pros always say are a good advert for the Premier League.
Yeah, Martin Tyler definitely did a good one late on. Well, I think when Salah scored. And that is the Premier League!
Yeah.
Well, I was with him all the way.
Extraordinary Egyptian, he said.
Who is the most extraordinary Egyptian? That's a very good question. Spurs have got the FA Cup replay against Newport. Then the North London Derby. Are you thinking of Egyptians? Have you got none? I've got Mido.
All I can think of is the Bengals.
Okay.
Who aren't Egyptian. No, but watch like
Cleopatra
one.
Weren't Egyptian either. I think they were from Manchester. So, no.
My friend Sharif.
Is he extraordinary?
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, he doesn't need to sleep very much.
Impressive. Let's first play Newport in midweek, then they have the North London Derby at Wembley. So let's move on to Arsenal. Beat Everton 5-1. Like to be positive, but how bad were Everton? They were just bad. They were really, really bad. And Barry, you sort of... I sense you take some pleasure in how bad Everton currently are. I don't know if that's fair.
Why? Not particularly. Okay. I wish Everton no ill will. What I find funny is it's a classic case of an Allardyce team having an absolute shocker, and then Big Sam comes out afterwards and completely absolves himself of all responsibility and tears into his players. Now, the players didn't play well, but he picked the team, he played five across the back, he dropped Gylfi Sigurdsson, he dropped Wayne Rooney. I'm sure he had his reasons for doing so. Danny Gabaldon, Ellis's chum and ours, mentioned on Twitter that Big Sam had tried the same tactics that Swansea used to beat Arsenal, but got it horribly wrong. And then Sam, as is his wont when things don't go well for one of his team, completely absolves himself of all blame and throws the players under the bus. But it was a shocking performance.
Ram says, is Big Sam dragging big spending Everton into a relegation dogfight because it's the only thing he knows how to do?
But they have improved, have they, since Ronald Koeman took over? I mean, weren't they bottom? They were sitting in the bottom three when Ronald Koeman took over. They'll be fine. It's just it'll be ugly football and a season that all Everton fans will want to forget, is my prediction. I don't think they'll get relegated.
No, I don't think they get relegated, although in terms of debuts, Mangala's wasn't the best, was it? I think he was at fault for at least sort of two, maybe three of the goals he had a hand in. But I see no reason why they can't sack Big Sam. I mean, you know, Marco Silva is out there and just waiting to be employed. He was the first choice anyway, wasn't he?
I mean, that
I'd
would be
forgotten
very,
about it.
Yeah, that would be very entertaining. That Big Sam would get a payoff and go back to Spain for a bit and come back in next February, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and save, I don't know, Crystal Palace from relegation again or something like that.
Arsenal were good, though. Mkhitaryan looked excellent, I thought.
Yeah, he was the standout player for me, actually. Mkhitaryan, underused. by Manchester United. I don't think Jose Mourinho quite knew what he was supposed to do with him, really, and how he was going to get the best out of him. But there's signs there, isn't there, with Aubameyang.
How can Jose not know? I mean, surely part of being a football manager is to see a player who's good at things and put them there.
Yeah, but maybe what Mkhitaryan likes to do isn't what Jose Mourinho wants from, you know, that type of midfielder. He prefers Lingard in that position as one instance. But I thought that Mkhitaryan, Ozil, Aubameyang showed signs that that they can be a really interesting sort of front three for Arsenal going forward.
Aubameyang is frighteningly quick. He makes Theo Walcott look like Jeff Capes. Incredible.
I really felt for David Ospina. When Cech got injured, it cut to Ospina, who basically had 25 coats on.
I saw that.
And a snood up to his eyes. That's the fact he was just like, I don't want to, not today. It's a bit cold. It's a bit wet. It's late. I'm not, you know, he did not come to play that game of football, did he? I was convinced he wouldn't come on.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Or he was going to come on in his coat.
Yeah, keep his beanie on. Well done, Aaron Ramsey. Not easy to score a hat-trick in the Premier League, and you did it. That's good.
I love Aaron Ramsey, and I feel sorry for him because he's played out of position. He's a natural number 10, and that's where Wales play him, and that's where we see the best of him. But he's asked to play too defensive a role for Arsenal to accommodate players like Ozil, and it, as a fellow Welshman, it frustrates me because then he gets abused for being asked to do something that he's not particularly good at. And yet, he's actually a very gifted footballer, is my opinion on Aaron Ramsey. So I was very glad because whenever he scores, a small part of me thinks, get in there!
How do you feel watching Ashley Williams?
Conflicted because he was talismanic at Swansea and it's not really worked out for him at Everton. And I want to tell Everton fans that we didn't sell them damaged goods. But, you know, he's been great for Wales as well, but it's not. Yeah, he looks very uncomfortable sometimes playing for Everton.
Burnley won, Manchester City won. That Raheem Sterling miss. people are saying it's up there with Ronnie Rosenthal and Chris Iwuemo's.
I would agree.
I'm not sure.
I don't think it's that bad.
No, because the key with Rosenthal...
Rosenthal's one, quite rightly, is something I watch on YouTube once a week, and it was in 1992.
The thing about Rosenthal is he has complete control of the ball. The ball is in his court. You know, it's his to finish. The ball's not coming to him. He's done it. He's there. I feel like I want to watch it right now. And I don't think it's as bad as the Iwuemo one, while I'm thinking about it. It was a bad miss, though, and it was funny. But Raheem Sterling has been brilliant. City should have won, shouldn't they, really?
Barry? I was watching City, and I thought, they're turning into Arsenal. They were just a little too over-elaborate and, you know, slightly wrongly calibrated. It's just, you know, on their day they're unstoppable, they're brilliant, but there was just a pass here and there too many, or a pass here and there just slightly off target, and that ultimately cost them 2 points.
Andrew says
probably won't matter really.
Andrew says there's a conspiracy theory. Have you discussed the City way? If they lose possession, sprint around to get back possession. If not, foul ASAP to stop the counter-attack. If that fails, go down holding head. So the ref has to stop the counter-attack. Each team member takes it in turn to be the offender. They're anti-football, Manchester City.
Most pressing teams do commit minor fouls. I mean, that's just standard behaviour, really, I think, of any team that plays in that manner. Was it Graham Wesley? I think in his time when he first came into the Football League, his team used to take injury timeouts during games. That was the accusation against these teams, that the players would take it in turns to sort of hold their knee for a couple of minutes when things were going badly. Maybe Pep Guardiola should have picked 7 substitutes. That seems to have got a lot of people worked up. I mean, not me. I thought it was perfectly acceptable, but a lot of people seem very angry.
What, not giving a youth team player a bit of experience?
Well, experience of what?
Wearing
a big coat and sitting.
Going all David Ospina.
You don't get that in the under-23s, because it's not real football. It's not real sitting in a coat and sitting with a hat on.
Pep can do what he likes, frankly, can't he? He's doing okay.
It just seems a very strange thing to get incredibly exercised about, as many people have done.
People just want to get angry about everything they can possibly get angry
about. I would
about.
Be more angry about Raheem Sterling failing to score from 3 yards
out. It was
out.
One of those misses that felt like a goal for the opposition. And it completely revitalised the Burnley fans. And also, in the age of the internet, it's a very, very gif-able miss. Mm. So, you know, it's a shame the Vine has fallen out of use, isn't it, really? Because I loved it.
Happened to Vine?
They've stopped Vines. Oh. That's what made Dapper Laugh so famous, was the Vine.
Was that the reason they stopped it? Manchester United, the only team to keep a clean sheet in the Premier League so far. See Chelsea-Watford tonight. Scott McTominay, 21-year-old midfielder, was preferred to Paul Pogba. We talked about Pogba quite a lot on the pod on Thursday. Jose said it's not a big deal. Am I wrong to feel like that it is quite a big deal, or not really?
Well, I very much doubt that Paul Pogba is going to be, you know, cast into the wilderness and never be seen again. So I wouldn't imagine it's a massive deal. It was quite a statement by Jose, though, to drop so many players.
It's the perfect time to do it, though, wasn't it? Huddersfield at home, you can kind of make the point to Pogba, you know, that he's got to do what the manager says and still win the game quite comfortably. I doubt he would have done it had it been a bigger, say, Premier League opponent. But Huddersfield are in big trouble now, aren't they? Failed to score in 10 of their last 12 away matches in the Premier League, which... points to relegation.
Well, they've only scored one in their last six.
They're
five defeats in a row.
Their last four games are Chelsea, Everton, Man City and Arsenal. So they've got a terrifying run in.
So we're relegating them. Are we relegating them now, Baz?
It doesn't look good, but who knows?
Does anyone have a view of McTominay's terrible dive in the 20th minute where he was barely touched by Terence Kongolo? Stuart Atwell rightly didn't give a penalty, although Kongolo could be arrested for grievous bodily harm.
It was peculiar. I mean, I would forgive Stuart Atwell if he didn't have a particularly good view, but he had a perfect view. Like, he was ringside, eating popcorn, staring intently, and quite how he didn't give a penalty is beggar's belief.
The best bit was one of the other Huddersfield players, not Kongolo, but one of their centre-backs, just looked at McTominay and just like, get up with one hand. The guy's been knocked out.
Clear dive.
But it is funny because those are quite often not given.
I mean, you often see it with goalkeepers maybe coming in and clattering defenders. Was it Gazzaniga did it against Southampton?
Yes, yeah, really early on.
And yeah, it's just it's seen as acceptable behaviour for bizarre reason.
Just reminded me of that bit in the Liverpool-Spurs game where the referee said, but did he touch it? And Christian Eriksen said, he did touch it. was it Emre Can who went, he definitely didn't touch it? Why are you bothering? It's hilarious.
All right. Well,
he did, or he didn't. He did, or he didn't.
Oh, there's a good chance for Emre Can and Christian Eriksen to do some kind of Chuckle Brothers panto-based show.
And I don't.
I'd watch it. How much would you pay to watch Can and Eriksen?
I don't think I've ever heard players speak in that situation. Because you know, the fact they were picked up by the microphones, you know, you've seen players go and talk to referees all the time, but I'd never actually heard what they said. And for them to be that
Have you ever seen the famous clip where David Ellery was mic'd up for an experiment game against Arsenal and Tony Adams just effed and jeffed, threw in C-bombs? It was quite astonishing, you know, but... A salutary lesson in why referees should never be mic'd up, or we should not allow to be here.
No, they absolutely should be.
Oh,
even
no, it would be great.
Turning kickoffs all to 9 p.m. I would love it. It would be so entertaining, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And to be fair, on our game on Saturday, people like talking about my amateur football career, the referee was probably 105, and he did not have a great understanding of a few of the laws of football, including offside, where one of our wingers crossed a ball backwards to the centre forward and he blew for offside. And I did spend quite a long time. I spent 40 minutes of Saturday insulting a 105-year-old man. And I feel terrible about it.
Was he being paid?
Yes. £30.
30 quid for
maybe
that.
34.
Oh, God. 34 quid to get Max Rushton shouting at you on a Saturday morning.
Could be a fetish for some people. Anyway, Bob, I apologise. That'll do for part one. In part two, we will begin with Ellis's Swansea. Welcome back to part two. In the break, we were discussing... Barry asked a very good question, which is, which minor celebrity would you pay £34 to be royally insulted by?
For 90 minutes?
Well, no, just a half, just 45 minutes. Okay. Ellis, you've gone...
Fiona Bruce.
Okay.
Real salty stuff. Sort of bordering on hate crime.
Is Fiona in her News at 10 wear?
Oh, absolutely.
Or her,
yeah.
Antiques Roadshow? I think Antiques Roadshow.
But she's got boots on.
Okay.
So she's running up, she's running the line and all that kind of stuff. And okay. Every time, you silly, silly. And I can't say the word I used to in the break.
Hey, Leicester won.
We shake hands at the end.
Oh, yeah. Great battle. Thanks. Great battle, Fiona. Thanks, mate.
A drink in the bar. Yeah. Everything's forgotten about.
Same time next week, Fee. Nice one.
Leicester won, Swansea won. Now, Ellis, it was producer Jonathan brought it to my attention that we've been trying to book you for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And you haven't been available. And this has coincided with Swansea being truly terrible. And now Swansea are doing very well. You are available. Oh, now, I definitely didn't have you down as a... Look, you're not a glory hunter.
Fair,
you're a Swansea fan.
I was a Paul Clement apologist, and I was totally wrong, because it's the same team, it's the same personnel, but they are a different side. And I don't know how he has changed, Carlos Carvalhal has changed Jordan Ayew into being better than Jarzinho, but it is quite something to see. The bad news from the weekend is that we've lost Leroy Fer and Boney until the end of the season. Mm,
Jonathan says, can Ellis try and predict Carvajal's metaphor to describe Boney and Fer being out for the season?
Oh, it'll be, I don't know, it'll be the immersion heater, but the weather is on the change or something. And I don't know, I actually can't work out what he's done, because it certainly wasn't work rate into Paul Clement. The players worked hard enough. But when they do press now, it seems to be with more purpose, and he stopped playing Klukas out of position. But genuinely, the change in Leroy and also in Jordan Ayew is quite spectacular. And I'm not saying we're going to be safe, but that the table makes for far, far more pleasant reading from my perspective than under Clement.
You're out of the relegation zone.
Well, because the reason I defended Clement was we played with no width, but we had no wide players. We played with no pace because we didn't have any particularly quick players. So I thought, well, it's not really his fault. It's poor recruitment. But I went to the Watford game a few weeks ago, and they just throw the kitchen sink at it now, and it's so refreshing. And I don't know if this is sustainable over the next, you know, few months, but... I love Carlos. The problem we have as well is he's only
so fickle.
we've only got him for a 6-month contract, and if you look at his list of clubs, he's never anywhere for more than about 9 or 10 months. He just must love renting houses, because he's had 15 clubs or something.
Do you get the impression he'd always get his deposit back?
Yeah, absolutely. He loves moving house.
He was moaning about the Wi-Fi, his mobile phone bill, wasn't he?
Uses 4G rather than Wi-Fi.
His Wi-Fi wasn't working in his house, and the club wanted to know why the mobile phone bill was so high, and he says because he's been using the 4G rather than
he keeps
the
getting
Wi-Fi.
Data add-ons. One more, Jordan Ayew's shorts were pulled down completely during the
big
game.
Big pants.
Huge, big...
bloomers.
Big white bloomers he had on. Sort of pantomime dame. Well, they were cycling shorts, weren't they?
Yeah.
And I'd never thought about wearing cycling shorts to play football, but I think I'm tempted to go full Ayew now.
I didn't know what pants players wore, actually. But now I know, and it's the pantomime. It's sort of if Chris Froome was in pantomime at the Wimbledon Theatre or something. I liked it.
Chris Froome as Widow Twanky.
Smee.
Could happen sooner than you think.
Leicester's Riyad Mahrez is on the warpath, apparently. He not turned up to training for a few consecutive days. I mean, I feel for him that he's done Leicester quite a lot. I really helped them win the league. The other really good players who won the league have been allowed to go and get paid loads of money and go to bigger clubs, and he hasn't. Am I wrong to feel such sympathy?
Well, I remember not too long ago we were holding him up as a paragon of virtue for the manner in which he was going about his business for Leicester when he could conceivably have been looking for a move elsewhere, and now it turns out he was looking for a move elsewhere, and not getting one seems to have very much angered him. Former professionals who are working as pundits seem to think there's no way back for him at Leicester now, and I'm not sure that is the case. I think his fellow players are fed up with him, but, you know, they probably take him back. I mean, they're not going to need him on the evidence of what I saw at the weekend. Diabate was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, he was outstanding. I'm with you, though, Max. I think that Morris is right to be upset and should have got his move. 60-odd million seemed like a fair enough offer, given all that he'd done for Leicester, getting them up to the Premier League, winning the Premier League. I mean, I felt that he would... I felt like he'd done enough for them.
But it just seemed a win-win-win move for everyone. Leicester made a huge amount of money on this player they bought for less than £1 million. Manchester City got the player they wanted, and he got the move they wanted, or that he wanted. So it just seemed a little bit petty. But then I can see Leicester's point of view as well. If Man City are playing £50 million for fullbacks, a player of Riyad Mahrez's quality is probably worth double that.
When people say that there's no way back for him, what do they mean by that? That he's not going to play?
Yeah.
That Leicester aren't going to play easily their best player?
Well, that he will refuse to play.
He's on the warpath.
And the warpath clearly doesn't lead to the training ground.
But if he wants a big move in the summer, then he's got to play.
Yeah. I think so. I think also they say the players are unhappy with him, but if he scores a good goal in a game, then they'll all celebrate, I imagine.
It's quite an interesting glimpse. So he hasn't played for two games, is he? Am I right in saying that? It's quite an interesting glimpse into the post Mahrez world for Leicester, because he is their best player by a distance.
Producer Jonathan has just put up his goals on the screen. Says, is he even that good? 6 goals 2016-17, 8 goals 2017-18. Did okay in 2015-16, where Leicester did okay, didn't they, in winning the Premier League?
I think maybe Mahrez is thinking along those lines, that he's maybe not, you know, that good, and the Man City won't come back in for him in the summer when they've got a free market to go at. So this was his one shot.
He knows he's a total fraud.
So, I mean, this was
like him more now.
He's just getting away with it.
Man City would probably have easier transfer targets and maybe even better ones to come, I would have thought, in the summer. So this was his one chance to go in there and prove, you know.
Essentially, it was like a courtesy car, wasn't it, for Man City? You know, Sane, their actual car had just got a puncture, and they were like, I can't be bothered to fix that. I'll just go and get another one. Which sort of is a bit annoying, but fair enough, they got loads of money. Out of the bottom three for the first time since October, Ellis, you are.
Yes.
Isn't that marvellous?
Well, I was full of beans before the injury news from this weekend. And, you know, we've got Andy King and Andre Ayew. So we've got two brothers playing up front. They've played with each other a lot for Ghana. He was great for us the first time round. But we are going to miss Fair. Not Boney as much.
So I was just going to say, Boney wouldn't be a huge miss.
No, well, when you watch him, you see flashes of the player he can be. But if you don't play for 2 years and you have a disrupted pre-season, you're not going to get fit. Mm. It's impossible pretty much to get fit during the season. And he's had quite odd injuries. I think he broke his foot. He got malaria. He barely played for 2 years. So when he comes on, man, he sweats. He is a sweaty footballer. I mean,
if he still has malaria, it's sort of understandable, isn't it?
Yeah.
But when he came on against Arsenal and you were defending that lead, and it did look like he's come down, we've got to give him 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of what it looked like when he was running around.
Maybe they should have got Fiona Bruce to shout it.
Anyway, to the other games. Brighton beat West Ham 3-1. It's a lovely goal from Izquierdo. And well done, Roger Reist, for playing advantage for Glenn Murray's first goal. And a crucial win for Brighton, that, Mark, I thought.
It was, yeah. And Glenn Murray now on 8 Premier League goals. That feels like a really good season for, you know, somebody that I think a lot of people, myself included, just had him down as a championship forward, really. 8 goals in a Brighton side don't create that many opportunities. You know, I think that's a great effort. West Ham fans were singing "Sack the Board" once again during the match. It's clear unrest and disconnect between supporters and club there, and they could yet be dragged into a relegation battle. It looked like Moyes was sorting them out, but
"sack the board" is a funny phrase, isn't it? Because who sacks the board?
Yeah,
no, they don't.
I love singing it though.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But I just because it is a ridiculous thing. So I have no answers. I'm certainly not going to put my hand in my pocket to save the club. I also don't have the administrative experience or the business acumen to be on the board.
Stop quite a lot of other people.
Sounds like you've just passed the fit and proper person's test.
Would you like to take over Sunderland?
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, poor old West Ham.
They are lost in 6, though, West Ham.
Got a lot of injuries now, though, haven't they?
Yeah, Arnautovic,
Lanzini, Reed, Carroll, all out, and they didn't do it. I didn't feel like they had a good transfer window, and the West Ham fans certainly don't feel like they did either.
They sold AU to us, their relegation rivals, which was an odd decision.
Really odd. From Watford in 11th, who play tonight, 27 points, to Huddersfield, 24 in 19th. West Brom are 4 points adrift currently. They lost 3-2 at home to Southampton. Lots of excellent tributes to Cyril Regis, but not really a performance to match that. I don't know. For some reason, I think Huddersfield are in more strife than West Brom, Barry, but I don't know if you agree or not. Clearly, Huddersfield have more points, so I don't know why I'm saying it.
West Brom had 3 conspicuous absentees in that game. Johnny Evans, Kieran Gibbs and Krakowiak were all out, and you know they're key players for West Brom. And I kind of thought they did enough to win the game and just threw it away. You know, really just giving away stupid goals. And on the day that was in it, I don't know, maybe it's just the sentimentalist in me, I thought they would win, you know, win for Big Cyril or whatever, just because it was a sort of a very special occasion at the Hawthorns. That's probably just stupid. But, that's the kind of silly defeat that could cost them very dearly and, you know, might be looked upon as a key moment in the season if they go down.
Well, you don't appoint Alan Pardew as the architect of a sort of long-term vision. You appoint him for his motivational skills because he's good for 6 months and then he tends to drop off. And they didn't get any of that new manager bounce under him. Yet their fans, if you talk to them, they don't really blame Pardew. It's all laid squarely at Pulis's door.
If you'd watched Pulis's football for a year and a half, you're probably just glad to have seen 5 goals, even if 3 of them are against you. Just on West Brom, I couldn't believe when I saw the team, Jay Rodriguez wasn't in the starting 11, given how well he'd been playing. Now, I know they brought in Daniel Sturridge and he kind of got a play. You've signed him from Liverpool. But Rodriguez against his former club, look at his performance at Anfield the week before. It just made no sense.
Yeah. I would rate him far more highly than Sturridge, to be honest with you.
He should have had a penalty as well, shouldn't he, when, was it Redmond? I can't remember. Someone just barged into the back of him in the box. Lamina's strike was wonderful, and we were discussing this on the radio yesterday, Barry. This is my favourite type of goal, much like Wanyama's, and I was trying to describe it as when the ball stays ball, and what I mean is it doesn't spin at all, it just stays... You know, just that's the ball, and it's staying exactly
how it is.
You can
see its logo.
Exactly.
Minerva Supreme.
Yeah.
Mitre Delta Ultimax.
What's your favourite?
The Adidas Tango 1982.
Okay, yeah. I think you can't. It's very hard to improve.
Sorry, I answered that too quickly.
A little bit, but I think I'm in agreement that the Tango
wins. It's unbeatable.
But a great Mitre.
Yeah.
Well pumped
late
up.
Late 80s Mitre.
Yeah, I think so. Not the worst is... the one with the pimples on it. Remember the sort of old plasticky one that you got?
That looks like a netball.
Mm.
Yeah.
That really hurt the thigh. Cold afternoon in February. A fun row between Ward-Prowse and Bouffal over that free kick, Barry. I like spats between players about who's going to take it. And I thought Jack Stevens did very well to tell Sofiane Bouffal, no, you can't have this because James Ward-Prowse takes the free kicks. That's how we've decided this.
And James Ward duly scored, and Sofiane Bouffal
kissed him.
Was immediate first over to celebrate. So, you know, there is a way back, Riyadh. There is a way back.
Bournemouth are unbeaten in seven. They beat Stoke 2-1, coming back from a goal behind. That's a great run. And it's interesting, isn't it? I think they've got a lot of points from losing positions. And that image of Bournemouth basically being really a real soft touch is potentially not the case.
Yeah, and also I think that Eddie Howe's a manager that believes very much in the process. So you just keep doing the same things over and over and over. And eventually, you know, if you put the performances in, you'll get the results. And I think earlier on in the season, it maybe say that they weren't playing that differently to what they are now, but that, you know, that they were just losing by the odd goal here and there, and now you know, they're nicking late wins, and the run looks a lot better. I think the upturn in fortunes came when I bumped into him actually at Griffin Park. So
really?
I'm going to take some of the credit for it. He was watching a few Brentford players, and they put a bid in for one, didn't they, on transfer deadline day. So I'm going to take a little bit of the credit for that one.
When you say you bumped in, did you physically bump into him?
It was quite close. It's very tight in that area at Brentford, so that there wasn't much room for me and Jason Tindall. Both had very puffy jackets on with woolly hoods. He definitely outmuffed me in that department.
You paint a vivid picture.
Outmuffed by Tindall. Did Eddie, because he seems very polite.
In Ireland, outmuffed means something very different.
Yes, well, my mind went in a certain direction as well, Barry. Eddie's a very polite man, famously. Did he say after you, Mark, or did he barge past you?
No. There was no. He's very polite. He was having photos with Brentford fans and all sorts. Yeah, yeah, very nice man.
Marvellous. A lovely collar on the Stoke away shirt. And I thought there'd been some really bad away kits at the moment. The sort of bright marker pen kits of
Liverpool, I thought they looked like a team of tennis players in that kit.
The Yevgeny Kafelnikov 11.
Just look weird. They look like,
you
know,
slightly 80s. I quite liked it.
Well,
we have different fashion tastes.
Eddie Howe was very modest afterwards.
What did he say? It's nothing to do with me.
Took no credit for the win at all. And he kind of lucked out a bit, insofar as you can be lucky when Steve Cook, one of your players, gets injured. But instead of bringing on another defender, he brought on Josh King. And Josh King had a huge influence in the game. That was very early in the first half. Well, 10 or 15 minutes. And, Josh King, actually, he had a touch of the Dele Alli's, a ridiculous dive as well that he got booked for, but very impressive by Bournemouth.
Somebody told me the Stoke Davidson and Dye had a good game for them, which I think is important because they really lack energy in central midfield. I mean, you saw the team they picked the other week with like Charlie Adam plodding around central midfield or whatever. So I think and Dye could be a big signing.
Do you hate Charlie Adam?
No. Well.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, there was a couple of tackles on Gareth Bale that were very X-rated back in the day. Hate's a strong word.
X-rated? He got his penis out.
Crystal Palace drew with Newcastle. And actually, Newcastle did well to hold on in the end because Palace were really going at them at the end. There was a pitch invader. And I think it was Alan Parry was the commentator. It's funny how commentators get... I mean, obviously, we don't encourage people to invade the pitch, but commentators get very sanctimonious about it's the biggest crime of humanity. And then it cut to Steve Parridge, who was sort of grinning, potentially about that or something else. And Alan went, I do not understand what's funny about that. You know, every fan is going, "Whoa, person on the pitch."
They analyse the tackle on Swedish TV.
It is marvellous.
It is superb.
Seems a strange time to invade the pit. You know, it wasn't like that much was going on. You know, there are times when you think you might be so angry or so excited, but at 1-1 in that game, I'm not sure why.
There's that bit in the early 70s when Leeds United
are playing West Brom, and I think West Brom's score might be Jeff Astle, but it's clearly offside. But anyway, it's a very controversial goal, but the Leeds fans pour onto the pitch, and Barry Davis says, "And Leeds will go mad, and they have every right to go mad."
Tonight, Watford play Chelsea. Christophe Terreur has tweeted, "Chelsea in hamstring injuries. Barkley, Ross Barkley, the eighth this season, fifth in a month. Who's next? Kante, Morata, Moses, Fabregas, Cahill, Willian, Christensen and Barkley." And then he's put a little ambulance by each of them in his tweet to show that they're injured. That's a lot of hamstring trouble.
Is Barkley gone again?
Apparently.
Because he missed the whole first half of the season with a hamstring injury.
I don't know if it's the same hamstring.
It's
unrelated, apparently.
Coincidence? Poor training? I don't know.
It might be. You know at the gym where one machine is broken and they just never fix it? Maybe the hamstringy one is...
People say poor training. This accusation was always levelled at Arsenal, wasn't it? That they had too many players in the red zone and all that. How can a team like Chelsea train their players poorly?
Oh, it was always the accusation, Conte at Juventus, that he didn't know how to rotate the team properly, and he overtrained them by just, you know, running relentlessly in the season. And obviously last year it was fine because they only had the 38 Premier League games. They weren't as involved, obviously, with Europe and stuff like that. They've had a lot of cup competitions with replays, the two-legged semi-final. And he just kind of, the accusation is that he just continues to work them in the same manner, whether they're playing sort of three games in a week or just one.
But the thing is, there's a whole team of sports scientists and coaches. You'd think someone would tell him. I just don't... I mean, I accept that that is probably what is happening. I just find it amazing that it's allowed to happen.
But I imagine on your XFM show, you just have this...
Radio X hasn't been XFM for 2 years.
Oh, I do apologise. Your pop show on Saturday afternoons, that you have a team of underlings and lackeys and flunkies who are all... No. Far too intimidated to tell you and Robbins where you're going wrong.
Unfortunately not. No, we seem to be at the bottom of the rung. despite being the difference makers, as Paul Clement would say.
Given on our radio show, Barry, yesterday, you said, "I'm sleeping with your fiance, Max." I'm not sure you're in a position.
Maybe, yeah.
Suggest other people.
Maybe it's a toxic atmosphere at Stamford Bridge.
SL asks, if the bottom 10 teams from the Premier League were relegated and replaced by the top 10 from the Championship, would anyone notice / care?
Well, I suppose the 10 teams relegated, that their fans and players would notice.
They would notice, that's true.
I think there is a case to be made that any team that does not get 40 points should be relegated.
Brilliant.
And the equivalent number replace them. So if six teams get less than 40 points, send them all. If you cannot get a point a game, or say, you know, that would be 38 points. You get my point. I'm saying point far too much. But any team that can't average a point a game should go down.
Well, I think 36 will be enough this year. And if you get 40, you could end up finishing at 11th.
But you know what? I mean, you may have said that flippantly, Barry, but it's a brilliant idea because...
Well, I'm not being flippant.
The games would be fantastic. At the end of the season, people would just be piling into attack because they need 6 points for the last 3 games.
Well, it's really... The division has really levelled out because years ago, I seem to remember there would be four teams battling relegation, but now the entire bottom half are looking over their shoulders. And I think it's probably a financial thing, but, you know, up to about Everton, it's looking dodgy. It's 7 points. There's 7 points between the bottom 10 clubs, I think. So 40 points now is it's a myth. People still say 40 points, but you don't need 40 points. You don't need 40 points for ages.
No, and because the top six are accumulating so many of those, then a Man City are, you know, on target for 100 points, and that automatically means, isn't it, that, you know, those lower down are going to take...
Maybe eighth down get relegated. Because that would keep it exciting.
I think we should just relegate everyone apart from the champions.
Very good idea. In the Football League then, in the Championship, Thomas Christiansen has been fired by Leeds after 8 months in charge. They haven't won since Boxing Day. Failed to score in four of those six games. Roger says, if the next Leeds head coach was chosen by 10,000 fans on a panel, who would Leeds go for? Producer Jonathan thinks it should be like Ebbsfleet, like a reality show. Leeds United, and it could be on UK Living. And we would all decide who what happens through a text vote hosted by Stephen Mulhern, I imagine.
Steve Penk could do it.
Steve Penk could do it. There'd be a panel with Andy Peters.
Yeah. Joe Swash.
Joe Swash. One of Linda Robson. I haven't thought it. This is just off the top of my head, this amazing TV show.
I like it.
Yeah.
And you'd get the entire Birds of a Feather.
Yeah, cast, or, yeah,
crew,
absolutely.
Cast and crew.
I've actually done radio
Quirk
shows.
Robson.
I've done radio shows with Quirk and Robson. With Robson and
Joseph.
But never with Quirk. So I haven't completed the radio show bingo, Birds of a Feather bingo. And Leslie Joseph, on the subject of lookalikes, she said, do not say Jackie Stallone. And I thought that was quite... or Sylvester Stallone. I forget. Anyway, I don't believe she listens to the pod. She was thoroughly lovely. Elsewhere...
there are vast swaths of our audience who are all live foreign, who have no idea what you're talking about.
And to be honest, it really wouldn't be worth watching the first four series of
to really get a grip on
To really understand it. Elsewhere, wins for six of the top seven. Bristol City, the odd one out. They lost to Bolton on Friday night. Remarkably, there were four games in the Championship in which there was a red card in the first half, and all those four teams went on to lose. How football should be. In League One, Wigan and Shrewsbury both won their first and second. Bradford in sixth have sacked their manager and club legend Stuart McCall after six defeats in a row. Five in the league and going out of the FA Cup to Yeovil, but still doing okay. Quote, we believe that our current squad is capable of performing to a much higher standard than we have seen recently. Fans apparently quite unhappy. Ewan Miller writes, Stuart McCall sacked with the best win rate of any Bradford manager in the last 30 years. A playoff final in his first season back, only out of the top six for 3 weeks in the season and a half, and the club lying sixth in the League One and not in charge of recruitment. Sad face. Ben says, can anyone think of a better comeback than Wickham's at the weekend? Did anyone see this? They were 2-0 up to Carlisle. They had a man sent off when they conceded a penalty. Carlisle scored the penalty to make it 2-1. Wickham then missed a penalty. They were then 3-2 down in the 92nd minute. Then they scored in the 93rd and the 96th minute. Cue incredible celebrations. Fantastic volley for them.
I heard as well that the Bean who scored the winner sort of went running down the touchline. But the people that he'd given tickets to and were sort of running, I think it may have been his mum and dad or certainly some family members, they'd gone home.
They'd left before the...
He runs down the whole stand. What? So he's scanning to find his mate, his family.
I'm not sure. I'm assuming that's where he was running. Yeah, it was just a crazy sprint. But yeah, the people that he'd given tickets to had already gone home and missed it.
Oh, that's the highlight of the weekend, isn't it? Wickham are second behind Luton, who beat Exeter 1-0. Cambridge unlucky to lose to Yeovil 2-0, and unlucky to have no wins in January. And that's a good place to end part two. We'll start part three with Sid in Spain. Welcome back to part three. Let's start in Spain with Sid. And Sid, we find you stuck up a mountain.
I'm driving back from Asturias to Madrid, and we're at a service station with hundreds of trucks and cars and stuff, and even the TV have come along now to do a bit of gawping because the mountain passes are closed. And Mr. Policeman has just said, I said, any idea when it should reopen? He said, well, put it this way. They told us it was going to start snowing at 6. So if we've already had to close it and we're still, what are we, 8 hours or 7 hours ahead of the actual starting time for the snow or whatever time it is, as you can imagine, we're a bit screwed.
So how long might you be there, Sid?
Goodness only knows. I mean, obviously, if it gets really bad, we'll turn around and go back towards Oviedo rather than face towards Madrid. But at the moment, we are very definitely stuck.
we will dispatch a St. Bernard with a barrel of brandy around its neck immediately.
Please do, yeah, with a little tag around his neck, sending him to Mieres. Yeah.
Actually, we have some craft beer here, if you'd prefer that.
That would go down a treat. It probably wouldn't be great for driving afterwards, but it would help in the meantime.
Do you have one of your big hams with you?
No, unfortunately, they're all in the garage, you see? This is the problem. You leave them in the garage, you should leave them in the back of the car, although the car would then smell very, very bad.
Should always have one ham just for emergencies.
In the car. Exactly. An emergency pig leg.
An emergency insurance ham. So you were at the Derby then?
Yes, which was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it was. I mean, obviously, I would say that it's my bias speaking, but it genuinely was brilliant. I mean, it's been well, almost 20 years since Oviedo won the first division. They've been down in the third division, the second division B. This is the first time they've played Sporting's first team. They've had to play the B team over these years. The first time they've played the first team in a derby for I think it's 12 years now, and it really felt like a kind of an occasion that said, "All right, this team survived. They've come through it now, and there is a future." And it was a fantastic occasion, and Oviedo won, which is great.
Barcelona and Real both drew. Barcelona's game was fun because it was so wet.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a huge amount of great football play, but yeah, it was fun. It was a bit edgy. I mean, in a funny sort of way, it kind of felt like it sort of didn't matter too much one way or the other because, of course, they got such a big lead at the top of the table. But it was a chance for Espanyol to be the first team to beat them in the league, having already been the first team to beat them in any competition since the Spanish Super Cup in the summer. But it didn't happen because Piqué, of all people, scored. And, of course, it kind of had to be Piqué after everything that's happened off the back of that cup game, with Piqué describing Espanyol as Espanyol from Cornellà rather than Espanyol from Barcelona, which is their official name, which was his way of kind of putting them down.
Real conceded a last-minute equaliser. Is the crisis deepening?
I mean, look, in a way, I would say yes. But then, of course, it sort of doesn't matter in so much as their whole season hangs on Paris Saint-Germain. The question mark is whether this has an impact on that. And one of the papers, one of the Madrid-based sports papers, was saying, you know, with every passing game in the league, Paris Saint-Germain looked more terrifying for Real Madrid. I'm not completely sure that's the case necessarily because you know, Madrid have made something of a history of being at times really poor in the league but still finding a way through in the Champions League. Last year, for example, they won the league and the Champions League together, the first time they'd done that for 59 years. There'd been 8 Champions League or European Cup titles in the meantime when they weren't the best team in Spain, but they were the best team in Europe, when they didn't win the domestic league but did win it in Europe. So they've always had a way around that. When they won the European Cup for the first time after a 32-year wait, when they won their 7th European Cup, they were absolutely dreadful in the league. Had they not won the European Cup, they wouldn't have gone back into it. So you sort of always feel like somehow there's this kind of second chance element with them that means, you know, and they certainly have the players to get it right. But it is true that they're getting all sorts of things wrong. Even if they had much more of the ball at the weekend, it wasn't great. And Sergio Ramos afterwards was asked what's going wrong, and he said, "Well, if I knew that, we'd have sorted it out already."
So their draw with Levante, Atletico, the big winners, though. They're the only team in the top 6 to get a win.
Yeah, the only team in the top 6 to get a win. And of course, you know, it gives them... First of all, the main thing is it puts some distance between them and Valencia, who've now lost 5 in a row. And that's very significant for second place. But I suppose it does mean that if there is even the slightest chance of someone winning the league that's not Barcelona, it's Atletico now and no one else. They're 9 points behind. Beat Valencia 1-0. And of course, the image of the game is the image of Diego Godin getting smacked by the goalkeepers, the two of them jump for the ball. And genuinely, if you watch close enough on TV footage, I shouldn't laugh, because of course it's not funny, but it sort of is, you actually see his tooth fly through the air.
Oh, whose tooth fell out in the Premier League recently?
Cullen, wasn't it, in the FA Cup, the West Ham, certainly,
yes.
Against Shrewsbury.
And a Cambridge player, Uche Piazza, had a tooth knocked out, and it was absolutely enormous. It was like the biggest tooth you've ever seen. There's a relegation 6-pointer tonight, Sids. Bottom two facing each other.
Yeah, there is. And in kind of different moments, I mean, you sort of feel like there's still a glimmer of hope for Las Palmas and perhaps some sense that with Paco Gémez things might improve, although, you know, that the evidence of that is patchy at best so far. But Malaga, it feels like almost an entirely lost cause. The other team that's been dragged into the relegation zone, of course, Deportivo La Coruña, have just sacked their manager, Cristobal, and the new man in charge is Clarence Seedorf, which will be pretty exciting. Even if he's not great as a manager, it's certainly interesting, I think.
Hey, Sid, thanks for your time. Stay safe, Sid.
We'll certainly try, yeah.
We'll send you a ham. Sidlow, up a mountain. From Spain, we can go to Germany. We've got another one of our news roundups, Barry. This time, Archie Rintutt is WhatsApping us the news of the Bundesliga from Cologne.
So, in the Bundesliga this weekend, we had two Premier League loan stars shining. First and foremost, that being Ademola Lookman on loan from Everton, scoring in the 89th minute away at Borussia Mönchengladbach. He'd only been on the pitch for around about 10 minutes as well, and his coach, Ralf Hasenhüttl, saying that he'd actually not been wearing the right boots either, and he actually wanted to take him off even during his 10 minutes on the pitch. But Lookman's goal meant that he became the first Englishman to score in the Bundesliga since Owen Hargreaves back in August 2005. And back then, the club that he was playing for, RB Leipzig, didn't even exist. Then on the Friday night, you had Michy Batshuayi on loan from Chelsea, scoring his first two goals for Borussia Dortmund, very much slipping comfortably into Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's shoes, albeit Aubameyang actually managed a hat-trick on his Borussia Dortmund debut a few years ago. That was enough to beat Cologne, albeit they didn't look particularly comfortable, Borussia Dortmund. Peter Stöger, their coach, returning to his old stomping ground and winning. And Dortmund still not looking great in the table, but they are at the advantage of not everyone else looking particularly great behind Bayern Munich as well, because you had Bayer Leverkusen drawing away at Freiburg. You had Schalke losing at home to relegation-threatened Werder Bremen. And that means that Bayern Munich are 18 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga, meaning that they could go and win the Bundesliga title yet again for the fifth year running in March at this rate. They won 2-0 away at Mainz, a very comfortable result. So perhaps not the most competitive Bundesliga season, you would say, but with the likes of Ademola Lookman knocking around, some good stories at least.
Yeah, and as you heard there, Mark, Batshuayi scoring two, getting an assist for his Dortmund debut. And Lookman as well from Everton, even though Sam said it was a terrible thing for him to do, scoring the winner for RB Leipzig on his debut.
Yeah, I mean, ridiculous, isn't it, that Sam Allardyce would have preferred Lookman to have gone to a championship club rather than, you know, one of the best teams in the Bundesliga outside of Bayern Munich. Just hope that he can get some starts now. What a perfect way for him to begin that Leipzig career. Batshuayi at Dortmund, he'll be asked to do something completely different to what Chelsea wanted of him. At Chelsea, Conte wanted him to hold the ball up and try to link up play with Eden Hazard, and that's not his game at all. If you just get him on the end of through balls and put service into him, he can score goals, and I think we've already seen that, you know, after one match.
From Germany to Barry's Italian piazza.
Napoli stay top after a 2-0 win over Benevento, who stay bottom of the table. Dries Mertens opens scoring with what looks suspiciously like a fluke cross, but we'll give it to him. He certainly celebrated.
That's harsh, Barry. That he meant that, surely.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Barry, are you upset that someone has joined you in your piazza?
No, sorry. Welcome. Everyone is welcome on my piazza.
Sorry, no, I thought you meant that.
Okay, I will bow to Mark's pure knowledge. Marek Hamzic scored the second, and they're the 50th and 51st goals Benevento have conceded this season in Serie A. They're bottom of the table with 7 points. Juve stay second. They hammered Sassuolo 7-0. Gonzalo Higuain got the final three to score a hat-trick in 20 minutes. And Lazio are third place, and they played Genoa tonight. Inter drew 1-1 with Crotone, and that's their fifth draw in a row. It's their fourth 1-1 draw in a row, and they haven't won in any competition since December the 9th. Haven't scored more than one goal in any of their past 9 games, but they stay in fourth, 45 points, Lazio 46. Napoli, it's between Napoli and Juventus, who are well clear of the rest. Bologna 1, Fiorentina 2, a game that was kind of remarkable insofar as both teams scored directly from corners. And Gianluca Mancini, no relation to Roberto, scored for Atalanta in only his second start. Youngster, his goal was given via VAR, and he celebrated by unwittingly getting caught on camera doing a snot rocket, which if I was good enough at football to be a professional and did that and was caught on television, my mother would never speak to me again. No matter how many goals I scored.
Is that the end of your piazza?
Yes.
Do you want to do a tiny bit of FitBar? Or we should just mention that Celtic lost for the second time this season.
Yes.
Which is a big surprise. Kilmarnock beat them 1-0. And Yusuf Malumbu, that's where he is. He's in Kilmarnock. I hadn't thought about him for a while, but now we all know. Well done to them. In France, in Ligue 1, game of the weekend was the late kickoff on Sunday. Fourth place Monaco hosted third place Lyon. Lyon were 2-0 up by the 27th minute. Monaco equalised through Balde and Falcao, who followed up his own saved penalty. Balde then got sent off just before half-time. Falcao went off injured. It all seemed to be falling apart until the 88th minute when Ronnie Lopez scored the winner to leapfrog their opponents in the league. Are you happy in the... Do you want to join me in the boulangerie?
No, I agreed with your assessment there, Max, of that encounter.
Elsewhere, PSG and Marseille won, and... Gwyn Gamps, or Guingon.
Guingon.
Guingon. Yeni Ngab...
Oh. Come on, Langdon.
I'll keep it out of it now.
Hey. Bienvenue, Marc, à la boulangerie. Qui est le bu goal scorer? How do you say goal scorer? Anyone? Scorer le bu.
Le goleador.
Le pour Guingon. Buscoreur pour Guingon.
No, I can't remember. It was in Canada.
No. N apostrophe GB Ngaboto.
It's gone a bit Brexit now, isn't it?
That's a bit.
It sounds
it's like Alan Brazil. It's like, I do struggle with these Greek names.
It sounds like something our Welsh guest should be able to say.
Yeah.
No vowels.
Elsewhere, PSG and Marseille won. Guingamp scored a 92nd-minute screamer against Rennes. Yeni Ngbakoto on the counter from a corner. They were defending from about 30 yards. Chipped the ball over the keeper. No idea what the keeper was doing. And that's the end of the French boulangerie. Just time for...
Why did you choose a boulangerie?
I had to think of a place.
A bibliothèque?
Well, it could have been. It could have been many things.
Hypermarsh.
Yeah. They're all as valid as each other, aren't they? I mean, you can't say...
I'm just curious to know why you went for a boulangerie specifically.
I quite like baked goods. They're quite French, aren't they? You know?
It's like the Greenleaf Cafe we were talking about recently, you know, masquerading as something else. What, you have to bake fresh bread every day as a front for your football chat.
It's just the
weather. If you had a shoe shop, yeah. You could just have the same stock all the time. You're making work for yourself.
The weather in France is not quite as good as Italy. That's why you can be outside in a piazza. I've chosen to be inside just because I think it's more sensible. I can do it all year round. Dustin asks, did Barry eat two more meals on Thursday after your massive breakfast?
Yes, I did. Oh, and I had pizza last night.
Oh, one on the one on the score. What flavour was the pizza?
Well, I'll get in trouble for this. When I do order pizza, I always get one spicy, one not so spicy. So it was...
two pizzas.
Hawaiian and sort of pepperoni with spicy bits on it.
It's quite a lot of pizza from one man.
Well, I didn't eat all of it, so I'll probably have the rest of it tonight.
All right. Lee got in touch after we... the four of us on Thursday decided that Jagged Little Pill was an excellent album by Alanis Morissette.
No, no.
He says, have you listened to Jagged Little Pill Against recently? I loved it too. It has not aged well.
No.
Isn't that ironic? No, it's not. Jim says, if you had to have one Premier League footballer as your cleaner, who would it be? Juan Mata for me. You know he'd do extra stuff like ironing without being asked.
Peter Crouch, because he could reach up high. Get those hard-to-reach, dusty areas, cobwebs and stuff, and he'd be good fun to have around the place.
It would have been Makalele, because he does a lot of the unseen work.
That's true.
That you don't know is important. But then when it gets done, your standard of your quality of life immediately goes through.
I think I'd have someone like Robinho, who I'd want to fire because they weren't doing their job properly, but I just wouldn't be able to. So for years, I'd just have... Robinho coming in and not really cleaning. And it would just be a, it would be a constant dilemma for me to maybe get Robinho an extra cleaner to help him. Christopher says, otters, pine martins or stoats?
I've always liked an otter.
Keep it British, for God's sake, otters.
And Chris, finally, stripped to the waist in a car park, bare knuckle, who'd win mano mano between Max and Ellis? Winner gets to host the pod full time. I mean, there's a lot riding on it for me there. You know, I think you need to put something up.
I think pure violence would be the winner in that scenario.
Would it be like, from my end, it's a Bridget Jones Diary fight? I'll be honest.
Yeah, I've got that killer instinct that you need.
I think if you even started with an aggressive face, you'd win.
Yeah, I don't think I've got it in me to cause you any damage. I think we'd shake hands. I can't see myself stamping on you or doing anything awful. Or who do you think would be the winner, Barry?
I can't see happening. I think
it's not going to. I mean, I'm going to have a bet. I think it's out the front of the Guardian and take our shirts off and start fighting.
Turn into a sort of women in love wrestle on the hearth rug.
I think we're more like we'd be more
in
like
in front of a roaring fire.
Spooning like the dog, the cat and the mouse. That's how it would be. Barry can spoon me and I'll spoon Ellis.
Let's co-host the pod, for God's sake.
Hey, that'll do for today. Mark, thanks very much.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Ellis.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.